Not sure if you've ever used the phrase, "I'm starting a diet." Have you ever used that phrase? Only one person here. "I'm starting a diet." Well, it's not true, really, when we say that I'm starting a diet, because, of course, we're always on a diet, aren't we? You're already on a diet. You're not starting one. You might be changing your diet. You might be adopting a particular diet. But you're always on a diet. What we mean when we say that is, I'm going to be intentional about my diet. I'm going to eat particular things in a particular way. So this idea that we're always on a diet in terms of our nutrition is actually true for our spiritual lives as well. That we're always on a spiritual diet. That our souls are always being fed, whether we want to or not. All right? It's not, I'm going to start doing something to feed my soul. You're already feeding your soul. Okay? Just like your diet for your body, your diet for your soul is already in place. Now, last week we talked about grace. We talked about this idea that God is at work in the world. And even when we don't realise it or recognise it, that God is the God who connects all things together and is always at work. And I mentioned this phrase, cooperating with grace, this idea that God uses us, that God is working in us and that God is working through us, that we have a role to play in God's plan, that we have a role to play in our own healing and our own spiritual life. Now, what made me think about this passage was I was listening to a podcast by an Australian journalist called Julia Baird. Some of you may have known her name, Julia Baird. She's written quite a few books. She's an award-winning journalist. Her brother just happened to be the Premier of New South Wales for a while. She wrote a book called Bright Shining. And she took that phrase, of course, from that hymn about grace. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun. And what she was talking about was this idea of looking at the grace that is all around us. A different way of looking at the world and of seeing what is present in the world. And so I was listening to a podcast where she was explaining this book and her own story and what led her to this. And in the preface, she talks about this idea of seeing the world differently. She said, often we talk about karma. So karma, although it's not a Christian concept, we talk about, when we use that word, we talk about it as if people are getting what they deserve. Karma will catch up with you, we say. People will get what they deserve. But she said to live as people of grace is to recognise that we get what we don't deserve. That there are moments of splendour and wonder and goodness and kindness and awe. And we feel so small and yet we're given them anyway. And she suggested it's there, that we have all these moments all around us all the time. And we just need to look for it. We need to see the good. We need to be intentional about this because it changes us. It literally changes the way we think. The neural pathways in our mind are remapped. We have these physical responses to these things. In fact, she posed the question to her host on the podcast. She said, what was the very last thing that happened to you that gave you goosebumps? So that's a good question. What was the very last thing that happened to you that gave you goosebumps? Where you were just caught up in a moment of, that is beautiful, that is fantastic. That is so lovely. It's a good question. And the hosts on the podcast talked about different things. One of them talked about how he'd gone to a family member's funeral and his mother was speaking. And he was just taken aback by his mother's strength and intelligence and the way she talked about his family member that had died. And he said, I've got goosebumps. What is it? When was the last moment you experienced goosebumps? So Julia Baird's idea is that we need to see these moments of grace, these bright, shining moments that are all around us. Now, of course, it wasn't a new idea because Paul said it first. And he said it in this extraordinary letter. I love this letter to the church at Philippi. And Paul says these words we've heard a few times, but they're worth repeating again. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, think about such things. Now, when Paul wrote this letter, he was actually in chains. He'd been arrested. He was under arrest by the Romans. And yet, the way that most people talk about this letter, they talk about it as a letter of joy. In fact, the reading, because we went back a few verses, started, "Rejoice in the Lord always." Rejoice. There it is, that word, joy. See, Paul knew this grace-seeing way of living, looking for these bright, shining moments, even when he was in chains. And he knows what it means, and he knows actually that he's lived this way. He knows it, because he says to them, "Whatever you have learned or received from me, do it. I've lived this way. I want you to live this way too. Look at the goodness and beauty and love that is all around, and allow these things to shape your hearts and thoughts." Because we can live differently, right? We know that. We live in an information age where we are overwhelmed by the amount of information at our disposal. The world has changed in the last 100 years. 100 years ago, it was difficult to get information. It was hard to get it. People got occasional newspapers or listened to the wireless. We live in a different world where we have information overload. We're overwhelmed with images and stories and information. And we know that also for the last 100 years that political narratives are often driven by fear. The people who write the stories in the newspapers, the politicians know that fear makes a good story, that fear sells newspaper, makes headlines. Fear makes the world go round. At the heart of our culture, there is a problem with fear and the resultant lack of peace, where we're anxious and we're distressed and we're worried and we're concerned all the time. And in fact, we can feed our own fear. Social media, all of those apps that we use, Facebook or anything else you use, they have algorithms. And if you look at a story for more than a few seconds, the app remembers that and it feeds you similar stories. Right, that's just the way it works. The algorithms work. And so we become focused on these fears that have caught our attention. At the heart of our culture's problem with fear and the lack of peace is a disconnection from God and a disconnection from our true selves. But you see, we know, like Paul did, that there's another way, that we're called to live another way. So, if spiritual diet is not an option, how are we choosing? Sometimes, some of the things that can cause us to worry, cause us to argue, cause us stress and distress, are about things that are secondary. They're on the edges of our faith. I was listening to another Christian talk about the idea that we're people of the centre. We're always people of the centre. And the centre is this: the kingdom is coming, Christ is alive, the Spirit is with us, God is still on his throne. That's the centre, right? That's the centre of our faith. The kingdom is coming, Christ is alive, the Spirit is with us, God is still on his throne. This is the good news of the gospel, and the good news of the gospel must be central to our faith. Now, what can happen in the way we live our lives, even as Christians, is that we can just assume the centre. We don't think about that, right? This is the focus thing. We don't think about the centre all that often. And what we worry about is the edges, the secondary things. They're the ones that consume our time and consume our energy. It's possible to assume the centre and spend all our energy on the secondary, pushing what should be central to the back of our minds, focusing on and worrying about the edges. So when I say the good news of Jesus is central, what do I mean? Do I mean that he saved me? Well, yes. Do Do I mean his commands to be good and to act morally? Yes. But I also mean that love and goodness and hope and faith came into the world in Jesus. I also believe that the light of glory is here, glimmering all around us. And that's the good news. And Paul knew that, which is why he said, whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely and admirable, excellent and praiseworthy, focus your mind and your heart there. And I say mind and heart there because Paul several times through this letter uses a particular word and we don't have a direct equivalent for it in English. The word he uses is a word called phroneo. You don't need to remember that. It will never come up in conversation in your lives ever again. But the word means to feel the same and to think the same. So often it's translated having the same mindset. That's kind of the best English translation. But it's kind of deeper than that. It's to feel and think the same way. He said you should have the same mind, phroneo, the same mindset that is in Christ. He says think and feel about these things the same way. So where do we find these bright, shining moments, these moments that give us goosebumps? Julian Baird talks about this psychologist called Dacher Keltner, and who's a kind of famous psychologist. And he did this massive survey across 20 plus countries. 2,600 people participated. And they were asked, what are the things that inspire awe in you? You know, what are the bright, shining moments for you? And you know what it was? And it wasn't what people expected, because everybody thought it would be nature. Everybody thought it would be the ocean or the mountains or the trees. The most common way that people experience awe, these bright, shining, goosebump moments of grace, is in each other, seeing it in other people. Acts of moral beauty, acts of great decency, of unwarranted kindness, of generosity and of courage. Those moments we look at where we say, be still my heart. That was so lovely what she said, what she did, what he said, how he acted. So we need to look at those moments. We need to look for those moments. We need to see them and we need to savour them. And the reason we do so is because it shapes our mind and it shapes our thinking. There's a thing in psychology called confirmation bias. Right? We all have the way our minds just naturally think. We have this confirmation bias. It works like this. So when Sharon and I were a young married couple a long, long time ago, it was the early 90s, and we didn't have much money, and I'd gone to the real estate agent in the suburb where we lived and said, what's the cheapest house you have in your books? And we found out what it is and we bought it. So money was tight. This is the early 90s, right? Those of you who were around then can remember what interest rates were like. So did the same thing when I bought a car. Went to a car yard. There was a car that no one wanted because it was bright orange. It was an ex-Ramset vehicle, a salesman's vehicle. And I bought this bright orange car because it was the cheapest. But do you know what happened when I bought an orange car? I noticed every other orange car. And there was a few in the 90s. Because I bought an orange car, I noticed orange cars. Have you ever done that thing where, you know, you acquired something and you suddenly start to see it everywhere? That's this cognitive thing, right? It's this confirmation bias. We see what we expect to see. We see what we're looking for. Right? That's the way our minds filter information that's given to us, the way our minds work. What are we looking for? What do we want to see? So Jesus talked in the Gospels about two roads. He said there's a straight and narrow road and there's a wide and winding road. Perhaps that narrow road is a focused road, a deliberate choice, fixing our eyes on Jesus, choosing to live as a child of grace. One of the reasons I love this book of Philippians is Paul gives this little autobiographical speech that just bursts out of him in chapter 3. And he says, you know, I want to know Christ, the power of his resurrection. And just after that, he says, I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. It's this kind of commitment, this focus, this straight, narrow road looking to Jesus. One Christian writer said, we're either being shaped towards wholeness in the image of Christ, or being shaped towards unwholeness, becoming a caricature of our true selves. And I think that's right. We have a role to play. We cooperate with grace. You and I can choose. You and I have agency in this. We can't control life or events, but we can choose how we see them. We can choose what we're looking for. We can choose what we look at. Most of you know that I was in Africa a few weeks ago when I was at the Salvation Army College staying with the cadets. And most of the times in worship, their brass band would play. And I have to tell you, it is probably the worst brass band I've ever heard in my life. It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And I was just shocked by this because, on average, Africans are way more musical than us. Right? And I thought, what is going on here? Because the same people who were in this brass band would then, they got up and all the guys sang. And it was a goosebumps moment, right? But then I realised what was happening there. What was it I was seeing in that moment? You see, in Kenya, like most African countries, connection and inclusion matters. So anybody can join the brass band. Anybody can participate. And everybody who plays in an African brass band just plays as loudly as everybody else. And nobody minded. Nobody minded because being included mattered more than perfection. Right? So it was this little moment where I thought, what is going on here? And I realised something important. Inclusion. So actually, it was a lovely thing. It was bad to listen to, but it was a lovely thing. What do we choose to see? See, intentionality can be challenging work. You ask, do I really have to choose? Do I have to commit more time and energy to this? I think we do, because we're always on a diet, right? It's not an optional diet. You are on a diet. You're always you. The question is, what sort of you do you want to be? What are the moments you remember and hold on to? What are those goosebump moments? Now, you know that I'm besotted with my granddaughter, Tenny, that I love her bits. But I worry about her and her mum, right? I worry about my daughter for a long time. It's a long time since she attended church regularly and kind of, in a significant way, talked about faith. And she came to have lunch with us on Father's Day, her and Tilly. And normally when we have a meal, we say grace to start the meal at the end, we return thanks that one person is nominated to pray. And for years I would never have asked Isabel to pray. Wouldn't have wanted to put that pressure on her. But on Father's Day she said, I'll pray, Dad. And she prayed and she thanked God for me. You know, for being a dad. How good a scene. It was more than a goosebumps moment, it was a tears in the eyes moment. It's around us, these bright shining moments, you see. And we need to remember them. We need to look for them. We need to see them. You see, joy is often an unsought response to the beautiful or the loving or the profound. These moments of grace and truth and beauty. Sometimes they can be things that we've anticipated, but sometimes they catch us by surprise. And we need to look for them, these bright, shiny moments, because it matters. Now, I don't say this to you because I'm good at it, right? I'm not standing here as an expert on this. This is a lesson that I'm learning and continue to learn even though I'm old. I know this theory. I'm not trying to burden you. When I was a young preacher, you meant to put the purpose of your sermon on the top, right? And I realised after a while that every time in my sermons I was saying challenge. I want to challenge people. Challenge them to do better. But as I got more experienced, I realised that people's lives are complex. For every one of you here, joys and heartaches and struggles and worries and concerns. Right? That's the reality of life. Things that I don't know about. Perhaps things that people that are closest to you don't know about. So I'm not trying to burden you. I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you that this matters. That there is goodness and love and beauty bright shining all around us. And Paul was calling this church and us too to shape our thinking and our feeling. He was calling them and us too to shape our hearts towards goodness. Why? So that we would know peace. So we would know peace. In a culture that is riddled with anxiety and stress, we need peace. And we can find it not just in rest and in quiet, but in looking for and seeing the truth and goodness that is all around us. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Let's see grace seers who look for the bright, shining moments, who focus our minds and our hearts there, even when life feels hard, when life seems dark. When the unexplained and the unexpected, when heartaches are part of our story, still we look for the bright, shining moments. Let's be grace seers so that our minds and our hearts are filled with the peace of God.